This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, I'm Margot Rose. I was Eileen in The Inner Light on Next Generation, and you're listening to Trek FM.
T.L. Greyhawk.
Welcome to another episode of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Justin Ozer, and join with me today are the lovely Amy Nelson and the wonderful Richard Marquez. Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fabulous. Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to be here every week talking about Next Generation.
I know. I love it.
Richard, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
So before we get started on today's topic, which will be favorite character moments from season two, we wanted to read some feedback from the Babel Conference on episode 210, which was our courtroom dramas part two.
Yeah, this was a really good thread if you had a chance to look at that on the Babel Conference. And Tim Hans says, always enjoyed the episode Devil's Due, as it was originally conceived as an episode for the aborted Phase 2 series, which Justin nicely mentioned in his fact check. It has that old TOS feel to it, despite being reworked for TNG. So thank you, Tim. That Phase 2, I don't know much about it, but glad that Justin mentioned it.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I guess, as I thought about it more, it does have more of a TOS kind of feel to it. And Amy, Phase 2, it was kind of an interesting thing that they were going for like a second original series kind of TV show before they went off into a movie. I'm sure Aaron Harvey will be talking more about that on Saturday Morning Trek coming up, but it's an interesting little corner of Star Trek history.
Yeah.
Ken said, hello, Earl Grey team. I have called Denny Crane at Boston Legal and told him to not pursue charges. Like anything
played
would
by William
stick.
Shatner, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like anything would stick. Anyway, I did wear my Army shirt. He said shirt? It's a uniform, dude. Size medium, by the way. Not too bad for a 51-year-old sailor, not warrior. To honor our wager. Going from Navy to Army is like going from the big leagues to Double A. I don't know if I want to read this now. Kidding.
Do you want me to read it?
No, we're good. We're good. I got it. In all seriousness, you guys took some risks in your analysis, and I like that. You were respectful across the board, and that usually allows for controversial areas to be navigated without getting hammered. Positive intent is the key, which when discussing religion and beliefs. Let's tie two episodes together and demonstrate how Starfleet is inconsistent and maybe shows favoritism between the ranks. I do believe Wesley should have been expelled, as justice was not equal in this regard. I totally agree with that. Crewman Tarsis lied on his application out of fear. Unfounded fear, IMO.
In my opinion.
Yes, thank you. I always wrote right out that I hate abbreviations, especially when it comes to comments. If he had been honest, he would have been vetted and cleared. Lieutenant Savick has the same heritage. Ethically, he lied and he is out. Now we go to our friend Wesley. Wesley lied, hid the truth, and should have been lined up on a firing squad. And should have
Ken didn't write that.
And should have been out as well. Why the double standard? Yeah, I told. Thank you, Ken, for dispelling those charges against us. I certainly do appreciate that. Yeah, that army uniform looked really good on you.
Yeah. Thanks, Ken, for the comments. Of course, Ken's the co-host of Standard Orbit, and we very much appreciate he listens to all of our episodes and makes a lot of comments. So I think there are a couple of interesting things in here because I hadn't thought about having like a double standard for Wesley and why isn't he expelled. And, you know, I thought about it, and I think, Ken, you're right. It wasn't quite right that he should have stayed in because of what he did. But then we had a further discussion because he was talking about Lieutenant Savick having the same heritage, of course, Savick that was in Star Trek 2, 3, and 4. And, you know, I just had a question for him about that, having the same heritage as Tarsus. And, you know, I guess it was the intention, and there was a scene film that Savick would be revealed to be half Romulan, but it was cut from the film. So that would have been really interesting, but it didn't really appear there. But yeah, there does seem to be a double standard going on, and we appreciate you keeping us honest on these things, Ken.
Had it been done today, he probably would have been kicked off the show for doing something like
or
that
with
his character.
Maybe thrown in jail for life.
Yeah, right? And they wouldn't need him unless they were looking for like missiles or something like that.
As we said before, today we'll be continuing our series on favorite character moments from each season of The Next Generation and the movies, which we'll get to eventually. And on this episode, we're talking about season 2. So we've each chosen 3 moments we feel are great character moments. And it could be for a main character or any other character that we see during the course of the season. So it's fairly open for that. So let's go through our first picks. Amy, what's your first pick?
Well, I
know I said Richard in the outline. I'm just surprising you.
I know.
I was like, okay.
Just change it up a little bit. I've learned that from Brandon Shea Matala, who likes to surprise us like he did on the last Edge episode, right, Amy?
Yes, that's right. Well, I mentioned this a couple episodes back when we talked about Loud as a Whisper, and I just have to say it again here with Troy and Reva. And I think I'm including it here because it really shows Troy's character. And so what I'm talking about is when Troy decides to try her hand at negotiating with the Salaeans when Reva's Chorus is killed and he decides that he just can't go on. So I just think this really speaks volume to her character and her determination to try and help others and to get the Salaeans on to forward moving for peace. And I think she also, it shows her character that she recognizes that, you know, she's not a negotiator by trade. And so she has limited skills and goes to Reva and asks for his advice. And I think that takes a big person to recognize your deficiencies and to get advice so that you can be better. And so I think that really shows her character in this. And again, my favorite part is, you know, she's talking to Reva and Reva's explaining, well, you know, it doesn't matter what the original dispute was. You have to find, you know, and take their disadvantage and turn it to an advantage. And then Counselor Troy just turns that right back to him and uses those words to him and says, well, why can't you take this disadvantage and turn it as an advantage? And again, just a classic counselor technique. And so I wanted to highlight that as it really does show her character so early on in this series.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good moment. Richard, any thoughts about that?
No, not really. No.
All right. Well, I'll add a few thoughts to it. I think that it's, you know, sometimes people criticize Troy and saying that she's not doing the counseling that she should. But I think she very much in that episode is doing counseling for Reva. And I mean, also just in simply by asking him the question, how does it work for you to do the diplomacy that you do? That's helping to bring him out of his despair a little bit after his Chorus is killed and giving him some kind of sense of usefulness and a purpose so that he can he can help her. So I think she's doing, like, in that part and in the later part where they're kind of coming up with this solution, she's doing some really great counseling, even if it's not something that's on the bridge, even if it's not something that's taking place, like, you know, in her quarters or office or whatever, counseling a crew member. I think she's doing a great job of turning the situation around and asking the important questions to get him out of that despair and kind of moving past things and focusing on the task at hand.
Yeah, this really shows what a great counselor that she is.
She's a great counselor. Yes. Right, Richard?
Yes, I won't answer for him.
No. That's like saying I want to go to Beverly Crusher to get treated.
Hey, I'm sure she doesn't kill everybody.
Well, I didn't say not everyone. Yeah.
let's not be too hard on them. Okay, so Richard, let's have your first pick.
So I chose, I figured you would chose this, but I already went through every single one of them, and I knew which ones you guys were probably going to choose them. So I didn't choose them.
Okay, we'll sure? see how it goes Are you out. Sure? We'll see how it plays out.
And I'll go with the standard, and let's go with the Manor of Honor for Riker. I think it's one of the best episodes ever of Trek of all times. Because, you know, it shows two different worlds, and, you know, it definitely shows what it looks like on a bridge on the other side of a Klingon warbird, and same thing with what they would have done on our end, I guess, the Federation. So, and it definitely showed how much character he had and just how much he's willing to do his job in order to, I guess, in a sense, learn and, you know, possibly even later on down the road to keep the peace if he needs to encounter Klingons again. But yeah, I think this is a great, I mean, one of the things that I really love about this episode is the mess hall scenes. I love all those scenes because it's just, I've said it before, it reminds me of those old barracks and decaf or cafeteria times where everyone's having a great time, telling stories, messing with people and all that kind of stuff. It's just a great time. Yeah.
Well, and in case listeners aren't quite remembering from the title, this is the one where Riker is doing an exchange and serving as a first officer on a Klingon ship, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's a great episode. Go ahead, Amy.
Yeah, I have to agree. This is, and it really does show Riker's character with his integrity and his work ethic. I mean, you see that he is continually doing the best that he can, and he's consistent in that throughout all the seasons, and it really shines through here where he's going to be the best first officer that he knows how, and he's still going to have integrity without revealing any Federation secrets like the Klingon captain wanted him to do, but, you know, still have that honor. And it just really does show what type of person Commander Riker is.
Yeah, it really does. And he's fearless. You mentioned that part where he's not giving up the secrets. And I love that Riker is going to stand up to the Klingon captain, you know, and saying, I'll serve on the ship as a first officer. I'll die with you in battle if I have to, but I took an oath to Starfleet that I'm not going to betray them or give up their secrets, so I cannot do that. And he gets the respect of the Klingon captain who says, well, if you'd given up the secrets, I probably would have killed you, but now you can just die with us.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's a really great moment. I mean, Riker, I think, shows again and again that he's really fearless and he's going to do exactly what he needs to do. And he's going to uphold, you know, the oath that he has. And if there's a perceived conflict, he's going to really resolve that and, you know, be true to all of the oaths that he's given in the past. So, yeah, I think there's some great moments for him in there. I wish we would have seen more like that, actually. I think in some ways, Riker was underutilized over the course of the show.
Yeah. And one other thing I was thinking, like what Richard talked about, like in the mess hall, like Riker really embraces learning about this other culture and isn't afraid to learn about it. And, oh, they're so different. I don't want to, you know, learn about them. And, you know, so I really appreciate his willingness to just envelop the entire culture and do their actions and say their words and talk with fierceness and, you know, jive with the women warriors. It's really good scenes there.
And I'll just mention one other thing, which is I love that when he's preparing for this mission and he's on the Enterprise D, he's in 10 forward and he's ordered a bunch of Klingon dishes, you know, gawk and all that kind of stuff, which we're seeing, some of which we're seeing for the first time. And he's eating it with like real relish. He's like, I'm going to throw myself into this and I'm going to love it. So it's just a wonderful part of Riker's character that he'll just throw himself into anything and he'll enjoy it.
Yeah. Now, if everyone would be so willing to learn and be open to new cultures and new ideas, that's the 24th idealism, right?
I don't know if I'm getting what you're going for.
Oh, I'm just because sometimes so many people are afraid to try new things. And
Oh, I thought you were talking about a specific character.
No, I'm just saying if everyone in this world right now would be so willing to enjoy and learn about other cultures, I think it'd be we'd be one step closer to our 24th utopia.
Okay, I agree. I thought it was a dig at Worf, actually.
No.
No, you're right.
So, Justin, what's your first pick?
Okay, so my first pick comes from the episode where Silence has Lease. Now, this is the one where there's this powerful character that wants to kind of experiment on the Enterprise, right? And there's you know, a particular part of the episode where Picard has basically had enough and he set the auto-destruct sequence and he's just going to relax in his quarters, right? And so he's, you know, sitting there relaxing while the countdown's going on, listening to some classical music. In comes Data and Troy, and they're going to, you know, talk with him about this decision and try to convince him to not set the auto-destruct sequence. Because before, Nagilim, this powerful character, had said he was just going to kill half of everybody on the ship just to see what it's like. And Picard figures out what's going on, and you know, these were projections from Nagilim and they just disappear, right? And then from the bridge, they're like, okay, we're clear. You can take off the auto-destruct sequence. He's like, not yet. They're like, what? So he goes over to the bridge and he says, you know, go warp 6, any heading, let's get out of here. And he leaves it until like the last second before he's going to abort the auto-destruct sequence because he wants to make absolutely sure that this isn't another trick. And I love that. You see that in Picard's character where he's willing to take the risk in order to be absolutely sure that his crew is going to be safe. Even when everybody else around him thinks that he's insane for waiting to the last second, he's going to make sure he does what he needs for the safety of the ship. And I just love that. And I think it's one of those instances that's the clearest expression of him making sure his crew is going to be safe.
Yeah, and that's even pointed out, you know, when Wesley's like, wow, he sure, you know, called his bluff. And then Riker's like, are you sure he was bluffing? And it's like, oh, he would have, you know?
And if Riker, who's like a master poker player, isn't sure if Picard was bluffing or not, then he's done an amazing job of like keeping everybody guessing, including Nagilim, I guess. So yeah, it's just a really great moment for Picard, I think.
Maybe that's the reason why he never got invited to the poker table. I know he had open invitation.
Yeah, but there you go.
Yeah, I don't think they wanted to really play against him.
Yeah, he's too good at bluffing. Yeah.
That could be. Actually, the first time we see poker is in Measure of a Man, which is later in the season. Maybe, you know, they'd started up this poker game and they're like, remember what he did when he was going to blow up the ship at the last second? Let's not keep him at the poker table here. That could be. Yeah. I like the explanation. Amy, your second choice.
Okay. So there were just so many. I was talking with the guys earlier. Just, I love season 2 so much. And so I'm hoping that I'm not taking someone else's pick. But I went to the Dauphin, and where Wesley is trying to get advice on how he can approach Celia. And so he starts with Geordi. And we don't know why he would start with Geordi. I guess we don't learn about Geordi's up and rocky relationships until later. But you know, Jordy's advice, just say hi and then say whatever comes next. Well, that doesn't work. So he talks to Worf, and oh my, what this whole sequence is just so great. And it jumps to Worf screaming and, well, that's what the women do. And the men read poetry. That is hilarious. And Data jumps in and Wesley's like, I want to meet her. I don't want to dissect her. But my favorite part, which I think a lot of fans enjoy, is Riker and Guinan in 10 Forward. So Wesley goes to Riker to get some advice from, of course, Riker, who we all know is pretty good with the ladies. And that scene in 10 Forward with Guinan is awesome. You know, and just how it goes through, and you're the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. And it sounds like a line. Oh, what's, is that, am I not sincere? Well, there's nothing wrong with a line. It's like a knock at the door. Are you inviting me in? I'm not sending you away. Like, the whole thing is just so perfectly written. And the interplay between Riker and Guinan is just perfect. And we can see it's, I just love it, love it, love it. I could quote it all day long. Are you putting me on a pedestal? You might not be able to reach me. Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night. I'm telling you, if Riker was saying that to me, I'd be jello right there in my seat. And then Wesley's like, totally forgotten. He's like, you guys, and Guinan, shut up, kid. Now tell me more about my eyes. That is like the best scene in season two. I love, love, love it.
It's pretty great. I don't know about best scene in season two, but it's pretty, I love it. I always laugh because they're doing all this over the top stuff. And, but like, as far as a character moment, do you feel like that's a good one for Guinan or for Riker?
Sort of throwing all three of them in because I think it really shows, you know, Wesley and how comfortable he is with the crew and how they are really taking him under their wing to train him and, you know, take watch out for him since his mother's not on board, especially during this season. So we get to see that in his relationship and with the crew. But yeah, between Riker and Guinan and just how they play off of each other, it's very good. So I'm throwing three characters into one.
Okay. Well, Guinan does tell Wesley to shut up, so I don't know how much she respects him, but she's like, get away, kid.
Yeah, well, I threw that in for Richard.
Richard approves, I think.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Anytime anyone says shut up to Wesley, I got it. I'm good. I got it. I love it.
But yeah, I guess it is good in, you know, seeing them in this kind of flirty, humorous setting, which I don't know how much you see Guinan in that kind of setting or Wesley trying to learn from that. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. What do you think, Richard?
To me, it's an act. I don't know about character, you know, forward, but like, yeah, it definitely shows how skilled they are, I guess. I was like, I don't know. I mean, I love the scene. Don't get me wrong. It's hilarious to watch them interact between each other. I mean, what, she's out how old?
Who, Guinan?
Yeah, she's like
a couple hundred years old
versus, you know, Riker, who's like at this age, what, he's like in I would say his late 20s. No, probably early 30s.
Maybe in 30s. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, it's just, yeah, it's great. I love it.
All right, so Richard, your second choice.
Okay, so I had a feeling that you were going to choose this one or something like this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Pen Pals. I love this episode. I love that, and it's obviously towards Data. Actually, it's probably more for, you know, I guess detailing what they actually mean by General Order Number One. I mean, in actually meddling in with a pre-warp civilization. But so this episode is obviously, you know, girl is asking for help, and Data happens to be the one that that answers her back, and then the dilemma is whether or not to help them. And I think that, I mean, it's really the whole entire crew, really, because I mean, I love that whole scene where they're like, their opinions matter. Picard has them all sitting around in his actual quarters and talking about what they should do and whatnot. And now, obviously, I would hope that he has a lot of experience up to then, but I mean, like, hearing it from different perspectives, it definitely it shows where they're all at, as in what they believe in, especially when it deals with a little girl from a pre-war civilization that's asking for help and whatnot. So, but yeah, I mean, I mean, this is probably for everyone, but I think it's more for Data, obviously, because he's the one that's that made the contact and whatnot. So, yeah.
Yeah, it shows him really having concern for someone outside of the crew, mm-hmm. and really having, you know, this care and compassion. Even though he supposedly doesn't really have emotions, I think he does have some sort of understanding or emotional attachment to this person who just wants some help. So it does show some interesting things about Data, and that it isn't just all black and white, like there's this regulation and that's it. He has curiosity too. He has a certain almost like scientific curiosity for what's going on with other species, so he's going to intervene here. So yeah, I think it's a really strong episode for showing him as more than just, you know, the android that talks too much and is very intelligent and knowledgeable. It shows that he can look beyond that, and he's also really wants to help others, even if they're not part of his crew or the Federation. Yeah. What do you think, Amy?
Yeah, Pen Pals is a great episode, and we do get to see Data, like you say, care, even though that's an emotion, but, you know, care for this little girl and the world that's, you know, on the verge of erupting and being destroyed. So definitely we get to see him and his sort of his logic. And it's interesting to note that Pulaski is sort of the one that says, well, that is a cry for help, and backs up Data and says that, yeah, we need to intervene. So I like the interplay between Pulaski and Data in this episode as well.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I guess I'll give my second choice now.
Oh, yes.
It's a choice from Q-Who, which is the episode that introduces the Borg. It's specifically the scene where Q takes Picard back onto the ship into 10 forward, and Guinan's there. What I love about the scene that ensues is that Q, it seems like he's afraid of Guinan or has had some previous dealings with her. And I think before this, since we've just seen Guinan in a couple episodes, she's kind of mysterious. Seems like she's long-lived and has known Picard for a while. But we don't really know too much more about her. And I like that this kind of adds to that aura of mystery. Like, she's a being who might be really powerful. Powerful enough that someone who's supposedly omnipotent like Q has reason to be afraid and to want to, you know, kind of fling her off the ship if he can, right? I mean, they don't necessarily take it further after that, but I like that we learn here that Guinan is really this powerful figure that's on the ship. So, like, I feel in some ways after this point that no matter what might happen, that you do have Guinan there who's going to have a certain almost like supernatural wisdom or like a power equivalent to Q's that everything's going to be all right no matter what situation that they get. And even if you don't see Guinan all of the time, I like to imagine between the episodes that there are these adventures that are happening where Guinan is helping out. And I don't know, that just adds like a little something extra for me to the series when you learn that from that point forward, even if they don't, you know, develop it much after that.
Yeah, I really have to agree. And it makes you wonder, yeah, does she have supernatural powers? I tend to be on the side of no, she doesn't. But her power, quote unquote, is that she's so long-lived. And like you said, it's that wisdom that gives her that power. And so no matter what Q would do to her, like because she has lived so long, like she's going to endure and find a way to get back at Q because she has all of this knowledge for how many hundreds of years that she and her people have lived. And so I think that really is her power, if you will, which is awesome and, you know, teaches us that once we become wise, that that adds power to us as a character in our lives.
That's interesting, because I had always thought that her power is something that is a bit more like cues, where she would have more power over, you know, space and time and dimension and things like that. But I guess it could be either way, but it just adds this mystery. And the, I mean, it kind of feeds into things like yesterday's Enterprise later, where she has this knowledge of what's going on in an alternate timeline, even when it doesn't exist anymore. There's something that's special about her abilities. And I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Richard?
No, I agree with you on that one. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you guys pretty much said everything that I would have said anyway. But like, yeah, the perfect opportunity that we could have found out a little bit more about her and her powers, lack thereof.
What do you think her special powers are?
I don't know.
The Q's afraid of.
It's got to be something big, because, I mean, you would think that he could just, you know, snap his finger and she's gone, you know? But I don't know. It's got to be something big. It can't be. I mean, obviously, we'll probably never know. But but like, yeah, for sure, it's something big that maybe she can control it and stop him. Maybe that's ultimately what her power is that she can stop everything that he does. Versus, you know what I mean? Like, you know, she's like the brake. And he's the gas pedal.
I mean, that's what I wonder, because I rewatched that scene earlier today, and there is one part where Q and Guinan are confronting each other, and Q says, you know, would you like me to do something about this, Picard? Like offering to kind of throw her off the ship. So he's clearly willing to do something, but I wonder if it would just be like a battle between whatever, you know, power energies that they would have. So. I can imagine.
Sort of like a Harry Potter sort of thing, you know, those two beams going into the middle.
Maybe. There is something in Deep Space Nine like that. I won't give it away, but yeah, I think of
that
like two energy beams. Like,
that was before Harry Potter.
Yeah, it was. So, but yeah, anyway, that's, I always love that. That's one of my favorite moments, because you think about the possibilities and what it really means. Mm. So, and I think it does take Guinan's character to a whole different level that you never thought of before.
It does, for sure, yeah.
All right, so let's go on to our third pick. So, Amy, what's your third pick?
Okay, so this one, again, just one of my favorites, and I'm sort of rolling a bunch of characters into the whole episode. But this is
Math? Is it math? Is it math again?
That's my honorable mention, so we'll get there.
Okay.
So it's Manhunt, and the characters that I'm highlighting are Lwaxana, of course, because this episode is about her, and Deanna's reaction when she first hears and senses that her mother is coming on board. Like, she is honestly stunned and horrified that her mother is coming on board. It's so funny. I love that, and to see that interplay between that mother-daughter relationship, I think is really good and adds to each of the characters. It adds to Lwaxana and to Deanna's. But what I really like is the interplay that Lwaxana has with Jean-Luc Picard. Well, she calls him Jean-Luc. And, you know, when she gets beamed on board, she's like, oh, Jean-Luc, such naughty thoughts, you know, so glad you think of me that way. And just the whole episode of Picard trying to run away from Lwaxana is so fun. And so when they're in the, when Riker and Deanna are in the captain's ready room, and Deanna is proceeding to explain to Picard that she's in this phase, which is like menopause, and, you know, how her sexual drive is quadrupled. And, well, and Riker's, you know, sort of saying, well, yeah, you know, Deanna told me this when we first started going out, and And she's like, or more. And then Riker's face, like, so more? Good. It's like, or more. And it's so good to see that relationship between them, that you know that they have a history. And then she's like, well, I didn't want to frighten you. But Picard, you're the early favorite. And then Riker's like, congratulations, sir, and is chuckling. And Picard's like, this is not funny. Like, all of that wrapped into one, each shows their characters just a little bit more on the lighter side. And I just, oh, and I love this part too. When Deanna's talking to Pulaski as they're walking through the corridor and, you know, telling her about the phase, and Pulaski's like, oh, I just saw Captain go towards the Waxanas. And she's like, oh, should I warn him? And Pulaski's like, no. As ship's doctor, I think this is an excellent exercise in reflexes and agility for staying ahead of your mother. I mean, it's just, I think it's so good to learn a little bit more about Picard and Loxana and Deanna and Riker. So I'm sort of, that whole sequence is so, so fun. I think it tells a lot about the characters and gives a little bit more of a backstory.
So we just see them having a little more fun with things?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Manhunt, I was trying to remember like what this one's about. So Loxana's trying to find a husband, right? Something yeah. like that.
And then, so Picard's like, well, it's in my best interest for me to, you know, make myself scarce. And then ends up going into the holodeck, and Loxana, you know, finds him. And then she sort of, well, she meets this holodeck character and was like, oh, I can't read you, and finds him so interesting because she can't read him, but it's a holodeck.
You know, that whole thing with Picard, trying to run away and avoid Loxana. I know it's a couple seasons from now, but it reminds me in season 4, I think it's Half a Life, where it actually starts with Deanna saying, counselor's log, my mother's on board. And you see Picard like crouching behind the corner of a corridor, and just like not sure if he should poke his head out. Their interaction and how Loxana makes Picard uncomfortable, I think is just...
Yes.
It's hilarious.
It's, yeah, the only time we see Picard squirm, and it's priceless. I love it.
Pretty much. I mean, he squirms, I think, less under Cardassian torture than when he sees Loxana.
Exactly.
Richard, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm surprised they didn't put like a comm badge on him or on her and then have the computer like warn, hey, she's on this deck, you know, sort of thing, like on the computer or something like that.
Yeah. No, I think it's always really funny. Not everyone's, of course, a fan of Loxana, but I think that she's a pretty great character.
I wasn't for a long time, and she grew on me. So, yeah.
Okay, interesting choice. Richard, your third choice.
Okay, so this goes without any surprise. Can you just guess what it is?
Is it Worf being hit with pain sticks in the Icarus Factor?
Dang it!
No.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
I know. I was going to choose it, and I thought, you know, Richard's probably going to, you know, take up that Worf one.
Come on, what's better than that? Oh, yeah. All right. Well, I would choose that one, but that's not what I have on my list.
Okay.
I completely forgot about that episode. Oh, my gosh.
It was in my honorable mentions. That's why I mentioned it.
Huh. All right. Well, that's not what I chose. I chose The Emissary.
Yay. Okay. I'm so glad, because I was thinking about choosing that one too.
Oh, man. That kind of disappoints me.
Well, we're talking about it now. So.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk
it's
about
okay.
it.
It's okay. Worf's in The Emissary too.
There you go. There. Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah, he is.
But yeah. Man. That sent me for a whirl. Anyway, but like, yeah, I definitely love this episode. It definitely shows how much of a I don't want to say traditionalist. Is traditionalist really
what I would say is Worf is a traditionalist as far as he understands Klingon tradition.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Especially when it goes to like what ends he's willing to go. Obviously. Kalar doesn't really want... Okay, so FYI, this is the episode where is it Ambassador Kalar?
Yeah, Ambassador Kalar.
Ambassador Kalar comes onto the ship and basically runs into Worf, and they had a I was about to say bromance. they had a previous romance, and this is, I guess, the fallout. I guess so. Or yeah. So like, I mean, I love how he's so tied in with his traditions, even though he's not a part of really the Klingon culture like he wants to be. But I don't think he really does. I mean, do you sense that with him? Like he wants to be a Klingon and have all the traditions, but not live with other Klingons. He would rather live with the Federation.
Well, it's kind of a tough question to get into his head, especially if we're just talking about TNG, because there's a lot more, I think, where we get to know about that in Deep Space Nine. But if you're just looking at TNG, I think for Worf, he has a certain understanding of Klingon tradition, but you know, he lived most of his life on Earth and in Starfleet, so. Mm-hmm. I think in a certain way, it's how he understands the tradition and how he understands Klingon behavior. And one of the things that is really interesting to see in this season is that Worf is usually like just so serious about things, right? But then when Riker goes over to an actual Klingon ship, in the mess hall, they're, you know, cracking jokes, having a good time, you know, like there's this side that you see to people who have been raised as Klingons and live on a Klingon ship, that's very different from Worf. So I think he's doing it as he understands it, but he's not really getting like the real experience of being immersed in Klingon society, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, completely.
But he sees himself as a traditionalist, at least in this stage.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because he's going to keep to honor and all of the traditions and all of that. But it comes, you know, to a conflict with Kalar, who doesn't care as much about those things, right? And is, you know, as much human as she is Klingon. And that's, I had actually chosen the Emissary as well, because I love how Susie Plaxton portrays Kalar as someone who has kind of this, you know, fierce Klingon nature, but at the same time has a lot of human quality. She's very sarcastic and she just doesn't take things, you know, as seriously for the Klingon tradition. So one of the reasons I love the episode is it's just seems like a perfect melding of those two halves, and a melding in a way that it just works. I don't know. There's just something about it. Like if I had imagined before, what would someone who's half human, half Klingon be like? I don't know what I would imagine, but it works. Right.
Right.
And to see that in conflict with Worf, who takes these things so seriously, and she's like, I don't take it that seriously. It's just something that people do in this society, and I'm not part of that. Implying like, you're not part of that either. You're the only Klingon on this ship. So why are you, you know, taking these things so seriously? Why aren't you fitting in more with the people that are on this Federation ship? So it's a really interesting conflict.
Mm-hmm. Amy?
Oh, yeah. I love the Emissary as well. And Justin really did say it best. Like, we get to see Worf's character more explored because Kalar is the opposite. You know, how she's like not caring so much for the Klingon. You know, it's a part of her life, but she, I think, goes more for the human ideals and to not take yourself so seriously. And I think she does a really good job in blending, you know, those two ideals and two worlds and two cultures together, where Worf is, you know, has grew up with humans. And so I think he tends to take it for granted, or the grass is greener over at the Klingon Empire, even though he's never, you know, been living there and, you know, as a Klingon. So I don't know. I think we get to see Worf's character really developed through this opposite mirror that is Kalar.
Yeah, and what's interesting about Kalar is she's opposite in certain ways, but the same as Worf in other ways, because you see them, you know, in this kind of Worf's calisthenics program on the holodeck, and she's just as much of you know, a warrior and a fighter as he is, and in fact is willing to, you know, almost take it further. So I like that you have that part of it, but then the other part that doesn't take things seriously and is more just kind of, you know, joking about things and trying to poke at Worf and things like that. But then what's also interesting is that there's this meeting in the observation lounge where, you know, they're talking about the situation. There are these Klingons that are in hibernation, and we need to see what we can do about it. And Kalar is basically like, they're Klingons, they're killers. We just need to destroy the ship. And I feel like someone who, like Worf, or someone who, you know, was more full Klingon would say, well, we need to treat them with honor and do this and that. And she's just like, they're killers, just destroy them. So that shows how she is very different from how someone like Worf would see something. So I think it's just fascinating to see. And the way that they develop Kalar over just this episode and the second one is great. You feel like you really know her almost as much as Worf. At least that's how I feel.
Mm. Yeah, agreed.
Well, I think it's time for my third choice. My third choice was from The Emissary, so I'll go to one of my honorable mentions, one of the ones that wasn't already taken. two of them have been. Okay, so my third choice comes from Elementary Dear Data, which is the great episode which introduces Moriarty on the holodeck. And there's just one scene. I mean, I love a lot about this episode, and we actually talked about it on a previous episode quite a bit when I had Lee Hutchison on. But the part that I wanted to talk about in particular is, you know, Moriarty has been kind of created or enhanced as this adversary to defeat Data as part of this holodeck simulation. And at first it seems like, you know, he is just kind of the evil Professor Moriarty, maybe not completely evil, but somebody who's always working against Sherlock Holmes, part of a criminal syndicate, all of that. But by the time you get to the end and Picard comes onto the holodeck and you know, is talking with Moriarty and telling him, like, I'm sorry, right now we can't help you with what you want to do to live out in the real world. What I really like is that Moriarty accepts that. He's like, okay, I guess if that's what it's going to be, you can have control as you might have always had control. So he's become more than that kind of character who's really just like a criminal mastermind. He's become someone that feels like more human and more reasonable. And he isn't just there to defeat Data and Picard, because if he was and he had control over the ship, he could probably just destroy the ship if he wanted to, or to harm people if he wanted to. But I like that by the end of this, he's moved beyond that original programming, and he is a more kind of fully rounded person and not just kind of like a caricature just there to defeat Data. So I like that over the course of just that one episode, you see all of that development that culminates toward the end where he's just like, okay, I'm in your hands because it seems like there's not anything else I can do. He's not going to take what might be, you know, the simpler criminal thing to do, which would be to hurt or kill someone or to destroy the ship. So,
yeah, I agree. And interesting that you bring that up. I hadn't thought about it until you were talking. Like, he does develop a sense of self-preservation. And like you said, like an evil mastermind would, you know, holodeck character would be just like, well, if that's my goal is to defeat and overtake everything, then yeah, I'm going to destroy the Enterprise. But because he wants to preserve his life, you know, that doesn't make sense to, you know, destroy the Enterprise, because then he would also be destroyed. So seeing that transition, I think, is very notable.
Yeah. Richard, any thoughts on Moriarty and Elementary Dear Data?
Yeah, so I for sure love Elementary Dear Data. I do love the whole Moriarty and Data, like, I guess, story arc, mini story arc, I guess you could call it. And just the battle of the wits sort of thing, it's awesome. I love it. I really wish they would have had more of that sort of like storytelling with other characters or something. Maybe another villain, or maybe just one other villain in the holodeck or something like that. Like, we didn't, or something like that.
What would be like a top choice for you for like a kind of villain on the holodeck?
I knew you were going to say that, because I was just thinking about it. I'm like, who would be another good villain? I don't know, to be quite honest.
Well, I don't think we see... Well, I guess they could have done something, because Picard continually goes back to his Dixon Hill novels. But we don't see another holodeck program show up as consistently as we do, you know, with the Sherlock Holmes or the Dixon Hill.
Yeah.
And that, I don't
or
know
Worf's
if
calisthenics.
There's... I don't know if there's a character within Dixon Hill that would be a main villain that people are familiar with. I think most people are familiar with Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes.
I was just thinking if they pulled something out of some other, you know, literature or movie or something that would be, that would have been known at that time, that would have been interesting for them to...
I just had an interesting thought.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Well... Okay, so I just watched the movie not too long ago with the, with this commercial on it, and I was just thinking of Abraham Lincoln, the vampire hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be a good idea, but no, I'm just, yeah, I, for some reason that just popped in my head. Maybe that could be it. I don't know.
Well, in Star Trek, he's not a vampire hunter. He's just, you know, in space.
Yeah, but if they have everything we have now today, they have at least some kind of copy of it. In the future.
sure. Okay, well, now that we've given our three choices, Amy, I think you have an honorable mention, right?
I do. And this character is one of my favorites. It's Math. So,
of course,
we are going to
Math Part Two. I hope that we get a Math reference in every single Character Moments episode, all 11 of them.
Oh, pressure's on. Okay. Well, I did have one last for season one, and I have two really good ones. I was just blown away. And I'm telling you, I was watching some episodes from season two going, how did I miss this? I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen these episodes, but I was watching Where Silence Has Lease, and you'd mentioned that, but you didn't thankfully take away my Math reference. So this one just for me really highlights non-Euclidean geometry. And there's two different examples that they use within this episode. The first one is fractals. And fractals is a self-similar, self-repeating pattern. And one thing that fractals are known for, that when you zoom in, you see the original iteration. And so when Picard and Dr. Pulaski are asking Data to zoom in to this void, it looks exactly the same. Like, and they're like, well, zoom in by a factor of 100, by 1,000, by 10,000. And the view screen shows the exact same thing. And that's what happens with fractals. And I totally, totally love that. And in my math class, when we talk about non-Euclidean geometry, I have my kids actually make and draw fractals. And we do the box fractal, Sierpinski's triangle, and the Koch snowflake. But I think what most listeners would be familiar with fractals is the Mandelbrot set. And that uses imaginary number set instead of the real number set. So I really like that idea of fractals in The Next Generation.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought of it as a fractal. I was actually kind of obsessed with fractals in high school when I found out about them in my math class. But because I don't think they use the word fractal, but they do keep zooming in and it looks the same, I guess what you call self-similar at different,
yep,
all different scales. Huh.
Yeah.
Very good. I hadn't thought about that. Math was hiding as a character in the episode.
Yes, it was.
That part of the episode. But you said there's another reference.
There is another reference, even within that same area where they're trying to get out and they have the brilliant idea. Well, if we drop a beacon and then go away from it, then we will have that point of reference. Now, that works great in Euclidean space, but we aren't in Euclidean space. And so they're moving away from it, but the further they move away, the closer they actually get to it. And it loops around like that. And so that's a type of spherical or elliptical geometry. And this idea, I just have to share a little story, blew my mind when I learned about it. Because when you're in high school or, you know, learning about math, everything is Euclidean geometry. Everything's the three-dimension XYZ axis, stuff like that. But when you take this three dimensions and you warp it into a sphere, elliptical, hyperbolic, like that's when things happen, when you can go away and yet approach at the same time. And what really blew my mind, well, everyone knows. Yeah, I'm going to say that. Everyone knows that the sum of interior angles of a triangle is 180 degrees. And when I was learning about spherical geometry, you can take that same triangle and when you put it on a sphere, then you get three right angles, which is three 90 degree angles. That's way more than 180 degrees. My mind was blown. I remember sitting in my math class at university going, what just happened to my world? Because my entire perspective on math changed when I learned about this non-Euclidean geometry. It blew my mind. So I love seeing this idea of, you know, that it's not this normal Euclidean space that we're in, that we're warping it, we're making it spherical, and that, you know, when you're driving away from it, you're actually coming closer. I just love that idea of non-Euclidean geometry in that episode where Silence has Lise.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, I guess if it kind of comes back to them, they are inside of like a spherical space in order for that to happen.
Yep.
And I like that too. Similar thing happened to me when my mind was kind of blown by non-Euclidean geometry. Like a triangle can be more than 180 degrees. I think there's some circumstances where it can even be less, just depending on how you warp the space. It's bizarre.
Yeah, that's in a hyperbolic space. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? There's actually one other non-Euclidean reference in that episode.
Oh, do share.
So I had talked about it a little bit, but I had just given a summary where Data and Troy come in when the self-destruct sequence is on and Picard's in his quarters, and Data asks, what is death, right? And I actually really like how Picard, you know, talks about, well, for some people it's heaven, for some people it's nothingness. And then Data asks, well, what do you believe, sir? And Picard says, considering the marvelous complexity of our universe, its clockwork perfection, its balances of this against that, matter, energy, gravitation, time, dimension, I believe that our existence must be more than either of these philosophies, that what we are goes beyond Euclid and any other practical measuring systems, and that our existence is part of a reality beyond what we understand now as reality. First of all, I love that Picard is going like that deep into like the philosophical realm, but he talks about going beyond Euclid to something that's non-Euclidean, which I guess is kind of the other references in the episode. So
yes, I love that too. I didn't write that down, but good job for catching that. Awesome.
Yeah. So if we have any listeners left, no, I'm just kidding.
If I didn't put them all to sleep,
but it's unfortunate because some people think that math can't be fun, or that it's something, you know, that they don't get. But I think that there's a lot of really cool, interesting stuff in math. But you're still awake, right, Richard? No response. I know you're awake. I see you.
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, that's fun.
Oh dear.
No, I'm just math was fun in high school. It wasn't beyond that. That was it for me. Yeah.
Well, we did have some listeners say that they liked my math references. So to those two listeners, this
to those
is for
two
you.
Listeners.
There's got to be more than that. Yeah, write to us if you like when we talk about math.
I was going
to
say, not everyone is on the Babel Conference either.
Yeah, but I enjoy it, but I'm kind of a geek about those math things. I really enjoy it. So any other honorable mentions?
No, mine were already picked or already said. Said? Yeah.
Yes. Mentioned.
Said, mentioned, taken. Yeah. So pretty much mine were taken as well, because the other honorable mentions I had were Riker in A Matter of Honor and Worf in The Icarus Factor, which I just briefly mentioned with the pain sticks. Maybe I'll talk about it a little bit, because we only talked about it because Richard should have chosen it. But
well, I completely forgot about that. I was like, I swear, I thought that was in season three, but I guess I must have overlooked it.
It's in season two. Well, and it's easy to overlook because the Icarus Factor is mostly about Riker and his father who's visiting and the conflict they have, and they fight in Ambojutsu and all this stuff. But then there's a subplot where Worf is, I guess,
depressed,
maybe more like stone faced than he usually is. But he's kind of like a little depressed, and you know, Wesley and Geordi and I think Pulaski find out that it has to do with this ritual, but they make it possible for him to do this ritual in the holodeck. And I really like that because he's doing this and they're there as his friends. And it's the first time, really, I think, that he lets someone else in on that kind of, you know, inner life, like an intimate moment. Like, this is like an important Klingon ritual, and he's being hit with these pain sticks and has to endure it and all of that. This is an important moment where he's letting people in. It's like, I think, one of the first times where he really lets people in. So I guess that would be my honorable mention, because I love that there's that moment where people can actually help him and really kind of share a very like intimate, important moment with him.
Mm. Well, and I think it really shows, again, what I was talking about earlier, like Wesley, you know, being really a part of this crew, and kudos to him for figuring it out and doing the research and figuring out it's Worf's birthday or rite of ascension or whatever, you know, that he's in, and then he gathers the troops and that they have enough respect for Wesley to, you know, consider what he's saying and then to help his friend. So I like the inclusion of Wesley. I think it's a really good season overall for Wesley.
I think so. I know Richard disagrees, but
yes,
always.
He can have always, his opinions, yeah. But I'm right.
All right, great. Now that we've gone over all of our choices and honorable mentions, do you want to give some final thoughts, Amy?
Yeah. Again, as I started at the beginning of this, season two is so good. I really had a hard time picking just three. And starting with the child, with Deanna Troi, and going all the way down through each of the episodes in season two is so much fun. I find watching them, each episode, so enjoyable. And I think we really get to see the characters, their more lighthearted side that we have highlighted, you know, just today, on how lighthearted and how the crew of the Enterprise is really coming together and acting more like a family. And I think it's definitely highlighted here in this season that we get to see that.
Excellent. Richard, your final thoughts.
Season two is not one of my favorites. I actually had a very difficult time with this one. I mean, because there are a couple episodes that I think are throwaways, because they don't really contribute to the overall. But the episodes that are really good actually have some really heavy weight to it, and actually, you know, propel those characters, and you know, those moments are great and whatnot. But I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of season two. I'm not really a fan of the first three seasons. I mean,
three.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the first three. Yeah.
Okay.
But like, yeah, definitely. I mean, it was difficult for me to find, at least five is what I found. But like I said, you know, they were already chosen and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, I'm glad we're all looking over these, because I completely forgot about some of it. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, before I give my final thoughts, I just wanted to let our listeners know that one of the things that we'll be doing after our final thoughts in this and future episodes is giving a little preview of the next episode. So make sure you stick around for that. So for my final thoughts for this, I actually like season two quite a bit. I think there's a lot of great stuff. Is it my favorite or the best season? I don't think so, but I think it's really good. And I actually found more moments here than I did when trying to go through season one and to find some moments. And I think when we did the character moments for the first season, there were probably more just on the main characters. And we found more for you know, some of the guest characters or recurring characters like Guinan and Kalar and Moriarty and characters like that, not just the main characters. So I really like that it's kind of broadening out. And I think we'll see that more and more as we go through, you know, the later and later seasons. But I think it was great. There was some, you know, really dramatic stuff, some really funny stuff. I mean, the best kind of stuff we love about The Next Generation. I find it to be a really great mix of things that are lighthearted with things that are very serious, things that are deep and philosophical with things that are just fun, like, you know, Guinan and Riker flirting, right? So I think there's a lot of really great stuff in season two, and probably, I mean, I had to eliminate a couple of things because I actually found more choices than I could use, and I didn't look quite as deeply into every episode in order to find something. So, and it's probably going to get harder and harder as we get further along. But
agreed.
But yeah, I'm really enjoying this. It's a different kind of perspective to look at the seasons in, and I'm glad that we're doing this. So, I did promise we'd give a little preview of what we'll be talking about next week. So we're actually going to be doing a character profile on Gowron. So we're going to cover his appearances in the episodes Reunion, Redemption Parts 1 and 2, and Rightful Heir. So if you want to rewatch those to take a look at those episodes and, you know, Gowron in that context, that would be great. Well, I'll certainly be rewatching those, and we'll be giving our thoughts on Gowron. I'm sure you're looking forward to that, Richard.
I most certainly am.
Great character, right?
All bug-eyed, yeah, and everything.
Oh, yeah. He's a classic character. Hope you're looking forward to it as well, Amy.
Oh, yes. I love the Worf and Klingon story. It's definitely right up there.
Yeah. Well, it's been so much fun going over our favorite character moments from Season 2 of The Next Generation, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, literary treks.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, I think, for sure. Well, in this novel, it's very much about the Klingons and their society. And it's from the perspective, for the there's a framing story, basically, in which Captain Kirk starts reading a book called The Final Reflection, which is told from the perspective of the Klingons, and it's ostensibly the book that we are reading here. This is the book that Kirk's reading in this book.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
Starts off with a quote, "Revenge is a dish that is best served cold," and is credited as an old Klingon proverb. So,
yeah.
That means that Kill Bill takes place in the Star Trek universe.
To the journey!
I like that they take a two-dimensional movie and watch it in a three-dimensional environment, only to experience it as a two-dimensional image watched in 3D that we are watching at home on a two-dimensional screen. This is meta beyond meta beyond meta.
And he's gone meta again.
You really have gone meta now. My brain just failed completely during that.
Warp 5.
And I think it's one that gets overlooked a lot because of a couple reasons. I think it gets overlooked because it's simply a one-shot episode in season 4. And I think it gets overlooked because it seems like a fan service episode for the Arganians. And honestly, every time I start watching the episode, I'm like, why do we need the Arganians in season 4?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That'll help other listeners to find us.
And if you're not an Apple user, shame on you. No, I'm just kidding. And if you're not a Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Speaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
Now, if you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us. We love getting your emails, so go ahead and send away. You can also find the network on Twitter at trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. So, Justin, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek, currently tweeting out my Season 4 rewatch of The Next Generation. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Richard, where can people find you when you're not getting hit with pain sticks on the holodeck?
Never. I'm never anywhere outside that. No, just kidding. they can actually find me on Facebook as well. I pop in here and there in the Babel Conference. And they could also find me on Twitter. I am, my handle is xransom. Wow, I don't know where I was going with that. Anyway, AB, where can they find you?
You can find me here on the network. I do a little show called Postcards from the Edge, and that talks about the fan response for the new Star Trek series Discovery. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place is on the Babel Conference.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, the amazing Justin Ozer, and Michael Heuter. Thank you for supporting Earl Grey as always.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Today is a good day to die!
Great joy and gratitude.
Just remember that math is fun.